Rose and flows of angel hair, and ice cream castles in the air, and feather canyons everywhere. I looked at clouds that way, but now they only block the sun. They rain and snow on everyone. So many things I would have done, but clouds got in my way. I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's clouds' illusions I recall. I really don't know clouds at all. Moons and Junes and Ferris wheels, the dizzy dancing way you feel, as every fairy tale comes real. I've looked at love that way, but now it's just another show. Leave them laughing when you go, and if you care, don't let them know. Don't give yourself away. I've looked at love from both sides now, from give and take, and still somehow it's love's illusions I recall. I really don't know love at all. Tears and fears and feeling proud to say I love you right out loud. Dreams and schemes and circus crowds. I've looked at life that way. But now old friends are acting strange. They shake their heads. They say I've changed. Well, something's lost, but something's gained in living every day. I've looked at love, life, from both sides now, from win and lose, and still somehow, it's life's illusions I recall. I really don't know life at all. It's life's illusions I recall. I really don't know life at all. Well, that song was written by the great Joni Mitchell, and it's her birthday today, so here's a shout-out to Joni Mitchell. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It's listener-supported radio, so remember to head on over to freedomslips.com or revolution.radio. Show them some love. You know, they keep two streams of audio of really good shows going just about 24/7 at Revolution Radio. They really do deserve your support, so make sure you do that. Tell them Chuck Gregory sent you. All right, I'm going to start off the show tonight with an interview I recorded earlier with Ava Berg. Ava was one of the very first guests on the New American Dream Radio Show way back on February 3, 2011. And here's what she had to say tonight.
Hi, Chuck. Hi, New American Dream Radio. Hi, everybody. Happy harvest season. Hope everybody's living in abundance and freedom. And I just want to thank Chuck and also Mike for inviting me on the show and having me on all these years, and for giving me a place to share my work and welcoming me back each month. It's always a pleasure, and I look forward to it. And a lot of new things have been spawned by creating new material for the show. So, with that said, I will go into my new piece. And, this is just a little piece, a little part of a chapter that I'm working on. And here it goes. Oh, so you think it's okay to just sit there and watch that stuff? Watching that ball thrown around like that corpse on the grill. You grilled it to death. You did it again. You tried to kill it. Tried to make a buck off of bitches and immigrants, mothers and the earth. It's you again. Sipping that stuff into stupid. Going out hunting for flesh and bone. For TNA. And shooting up the place. Spreading bombs and gods and bullets and wars and police states. I mean, dude, what's up? This is like blasting into the past. I guess you need those military guns for the people to control the drugs, get those drug dealers. But where's the Mark, Eli Lilly payback for the poisons, the prisons, the GMO, MSG, ED from mercury, and IBS from the sodas and hot dogs and Coke and choked over the aluminum and fluoride covering your third eye, the HBP over 200 from the trauma, all the slavery and oppression, and those civil rights are always on the border, always on the fences about the history and truth. So what is it, man? What is it with those wars over resources and oil and gold and those wells of waterways to drop that shit radioactive in the waters so they can be dumber, even dumber than you, for believing that stuff about Jesus and what's his name, another one in a loincloth, and all those others for stories of the patriarchy killing over free speech and giving, just sharing, and wandering and helping the people. I see the narrative. Be the love in the world. Among all the war, all the wars and the whores, and peace over war. Now let's get it together. You guys, and the girls are in it too. So they have to not support it either. Don't put up with it. Don't put up with the lies over sanctions and wars and soldiers and college. And travel and girls. Don't spread it. Don't squirt the seed all over everyone. You wouldn't like it sprayed on you either, so don't do it to others. And let's promise to try harder, not to be such a dick and a sucker. Those policies that favor wars and bombs and taxes and religions and nonprofits. I mean, really? You can't see we don't believe it? That we're bored and tired? Tired of all the lies? Again and again, the same old stuff, the sameness of tricks on the TV sets, the flat screens, the plasma spreading DVD over weed smashed on the screen, of porn, fake smiles over canned laughter. That's weird. I feel forced to go along with it. The laugh at the tracks and gather for the games, clap when the team scores, and scream when they get that small ball in the hole. Yet they ignore their water being poisoned, their food being sprayed with more of that stuff they like to squirt, squirting the earth and the mother. Is that how you treat her? Is that how you just get there and smile and say, oh, I know. How about a food policy that serves the people so that everyone eats and lives and is free? Everyone's souls clean, clean water. And everyone should clean their own water and take the responsibility for their own food. For sharing with the community, the food economy, the new Green Deal should be something much different than what they say or you think. Think bigger. Look beyond the existing theories and failed practices. The ancient texts, who cares? Just be in the now. Do now. The now way, the way to be really, really responsible and free and watching out for the planet and all others. We should all have it. All have places to relax and be happy and free. That's all of us, not just some, and everyone has it, from the wheelchairs to the dark-skinned to the aged to the newborns and the ones that have a heartbeat, and that includes cats and cows, and all of us should be left alone to live and be happy. Don't step in my habitat. Get out of my room and planet and house. Stay out of the slaughterhouses and stop feeding the machine. Stop eating the dead and rotting, the burned out flesh of a huge being that wanted to live off the land and be free. You had to just shove it down our throats and our asses to force inseminate. It's part of the violence and unfairness, the cages and terror, the stealing of babies and lives and families, the blood dripping down gutters and soils. It's on our faces. I can see the bites of flesh from the meat on your fake smile. Pretending you made it big with the three bedroom, the big rooms and sales and big deals from the carpets with formaldehyde and that good deal on the house and the freeway next to the prisons and the police station. Well, stay safe. That way we'll have more protection. The government is always looking out for us and making sure we survive with peace and abundance and free and happy. They are there to serve us. They are there to make sure we all get fed and taken care of, that we all have a good education and a nice place to live, a clean place to sleep, and clean food. The clean water is so important. That's why the government is always looking out for us. The uses of your tax dollars, the way our schools are run, and the way our healthcare system is so great. It takes care of so many people, doctors, chapter, medicine, and laws and constitution. It's always looking out for us. The government loves us. And there you go. And I love the new American dream.
Well, thank you, Abba. And wow, quite an impact with that, I'll tell you. Wow, I just don't know what to say. The government loves us, huh?
Don't forget how much they love us. You know, how much they take care of us and all the things they do for us.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. How could we forget?
With our tax dollars, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's exciting to think of all the possibilities and, you know, all the places we're going and all the new changes in store for us.
Huh.
After all, the government loves us.
Yeah. Abba, thank you so much for being on the New American Dream. And you've been a part of this, I think, from our very first show. And yeah, it's I am so lucky to have you, you know, stick with me and share your poetry and your other writings. It's just a blessing. So in this,
thank you so much.
In this harvest month and this month of Thanksgiving, let me say thank you to you.
Thanks a lot, and thanks to you too. I really appreciate being invited back again and again every month. And you know, I always look forward to it, and I always look forward to creating something new or recreating something that I'd had that had been sitting on, you know, unlooked at and unused in my notes for years. So it's a way that I, you know, re-enliven work that may have never been seen or heard of. So this is a great opportunity for me. And I'm always flattered and excited and pure joy that you enjoy it. And, you know, I hope we can keep going with it.
You bet. You bet. And if indeed preparing things for the show has spurred you to more creative work, you know, in the rest of your life, well, then I feel like I've been a part of something that's a big success.
Oh, you have for sure, definitely.
All right.
Thank you. I'll talk to you next month, Chuck, and in the meantime, we'll be in touch about some other projects, and I appreciate all your work.
You bet. Okay.
All right.
Thanks again.
You're welcome.
Talk to you next month. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Okay, bye.
Well, Abba started off thanking Mike as well, and for those of you who might be new to the show, Mike Palachek was my co-host up until early this summer. So from February 2011 until, I don't know, June or July of 2019. So, and Mike wrote a lot of the work that was presented on the show. And, since we have a little bit of time before our station break here, I'm going to share a little bit of his writing with you right about now. We're pretty sure you'll like the fall limited edition of Lake Winota Misty Mulch Beer, a special blend with dirt veneer, bait aroma, and grass clipping undertones. Lake Winota Misty Mulch Beer encourages you to join the Catholic Church and especially the Diocese of Green Bay and the Basilica of St. Nitschke, where all the vestments are green and gold and every day is Sunday. Carl? Carl? Carl, are you there? I'm sorry, I wasn't listening. Looks like we have Carl on the line. Carl, what's happening in Baraboo? Have we lost Carl? Over here. Penn 10-5. Over here. Bud, right here. Carl, how much for a case? A case of Penn 10-5. Carl? Herb, are you there? Hello, Herb? I'm here, Carl. We're all here. Carl, what exactly is Penn's 10-5? I think what you mean is 10W, 30 or 40. You don't know what you're talking about, Herb. Probably don't even have Penn's in Minnesota. Probably got some kind of fancy metrosexual craft oil like Duck Duck Grey Duck Summit Avenue Pale Ale 10-5. That's actually not bad, Carl. Maybe you should have your own micro-Penn's brewery. This just in, it's 5W or 10W, 30 or 40 with the W. Get this, standing for winter. I did not know that. That's not true, Herb. That's fake news. Fake news. W does not stand for winter. How could it? How could it? Well, it just does. It's all about viscosity. You don't know a thing about viscosity, Herb. I can tell you that. You don't know nothing about viscosity. We invented viscosity. I can tell you that. And the W stands for Wisconsin. Everybody knows that, Herb. Everybody but you, apparently. Well, Carl, in any case, if there's a sale on 5 Wisconsin 30 Penn's in Baraboo, I've got to get over there. Going like hotcakes, Herb. Like lightning. I can tell you that. Holy. What's that, Carl? What's happening? Nothing, Herb. You wouldn't understand. Perhaps I wouldn't. So Carl, the offensive line. So, yeah, things changed in this country since last week, Herb. I think you know why. The offensive line, you found someone? Center? Guard? Not a left tackle. What are we talking about? I think you know, Herb. This nation was attacked. Yeah, Herb? More than that. Well, I understand, Carl. It's like the president said, time to get behind this country. Ain't all over till the fat lady sings, said Carl. I think it's just beginning, actually. You mean Kate Smith? I mean Mrs. Bulakowski. Mrs. Bulakowski? Mrs. Bulakowski her. Have some respect. She's famous. Famous person. She's the polka queen of Oshkosh in the polka dot dress. Get it? The moon was an inside job. Think about her. Hansel and Gretel, bread crumbs. Lost in the woods. Oh, maybe I might, but I think you're exiting Earth's orbit, Carl. Yeah. And she'd not sang. She was supposed to sing Friday night at the Legion, and something happened. I don't know what. Something. Dancing Iowans, Curb. Iowa Geans, up and down, sideways. Bopsy, bopsy, bop. Bramalama ding ding. Bubba Kinkoski works for the NRD. It's code green and yellow. We're not stupid over here, Herb. We're thinking and evolving every day, Herb, every day. Think about that for a moment. Well, I can't help but do exactly that. So that's the mood these days in the People's Republic of Scotty. That's all well and good. What exactly does all that mean, Carl? Carl? Don't you know, Herb? Don't tell me that you don't know. Remember the White Rose. The White Rose. A church bowling league? A nursing home? Not to be facetious, Carl. What exactly is the White Rose? You'll see, Herb. You'll see. Mrs. Bulakowski sat at the Legion Club bar in her pheasant print pleasant dress, comfortable work boots, leather half gloves, and backward orange construction hard hat, sipping her liney as Elvis Picorni propped the back door open with one foot while dragging in a section of his drum kit. The metal door with the 1950s painted old Milwaukee lettering let a shaft of Jacob's Ladder white light highlight the bar in quick cuts, while Elvis clambered back and forth through the mud and the bud and the deer. Then all was dark again, prescient as the earth a minute after creation. Cool, quiet, but for a few glasses clanking in the sink, and the big flag flapping out front, a tired gray horse head on a stick. It's what they're calling a freaking oatmeal stout, said the bartender. Crafty beer. My favorite one's called WMD, and we got a new one from the Lake Calhoun neighborhood in Minneapolis on your left. Is it a lager? No. A pilsner? They're good too. Yeah, no. Porter then? Well, not exactly. Is it like pouring piss out of a boot and telling yourself you like it? That's it. That's it exactly. Well, that's just a little sample of some of Mike Palachek's writing. Pretty creative and always a little bit off the wall, and he really makes you think. I do miss having him as my co-host on the New American Dream Radio Show. So once again, I'd like to remind you all, this is a listener-supported radio. We are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, and it's now time for the station break. So I'll talk to you on the other side. Thank you.
Sunset Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
All right, thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Well, welcome back, everyone. Once again, this is Chuck Gregory and the New American Dream Radio Show. And right now, I'm going to add Philip Ferrugio to our show. Philip joins me for this second segment each week. He actually served as a co-host for this segment. Right now, we're calling him in. Philip is in Port Orange, Florida.
Hello.
Hello, Philip.
We're you on are the air, huh?
American Dream Radio Show.
I'm on the air. I love it. It's fantastic, Chuck, isn't it? Are you there?
Yeah.
Hello. Okay, let's get right to it. Okay, Chuck? Let's get right to it. The circus never left. Chuck, do you remember the other joy of going to the circus as a child? It was quite an experience to walk through the sideshow, watching the clowns or viewing the main acts on center stage. Mm. You know, I was mesmerized by all this for 2 hours running. The colors, the costumes, the music all transported me into a wonderland. Well, stroll down the dial of your boob tube and catch any of those news talk shows to revisit such an experience. The best bumper sticker I ever have seen recently was, "Elect a clown and get a circus." Imagine that around 50% of those who actually voted chose an orange-haired, deep-tanned reality television and multi-bankrupt man to be our president. Now, those with even an iota of intelligence realize that if the Democrats had run Donald Duck in 2016, they would have defeated Donald Trump. They chose not, and we got President Cheetos. Remember then, drained the swamp. He went ahead and he filled it. Of course, if Miss Hillary got in, as with Mr. Obama, the working stiffs nationwide would have seen little in the way of dynamic change. Maybe even an increase in the new Cold War with the Russians. Regardless of whatever of the two parties occupies 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, the thing they all claim they cherish, the middle class, would be strangled. Look, we all know there are so many issues that working stiffs should care about, as was always the case. What is disgusting is when both parties keep on sucking up to the super rich. The mainstream media, from both sides of this phony political spectrum, even criticizes Ms. Warren as being radical for her ridiculous plan in my case, it's ridiculous, to level the playing field by an added 2% surtax on all wealth over $50 million. I heard you just changed it to 6%. Wow. They must really have those jet setters trembling in their $2,000 shoes and high heels. For my door number one, this writer has always trumpeted a real plan of taxing all income of $1 million and over at a 50% flat tax with zero deductions. Your first million is taxed at the current rate at 37%, and thereafter the surtax would kick in. That would fill our treasury with enough moolah to fix our infrastructure, give viable Medicare for all without even needing private insurance companies, begin subsidizing public banking, especially nonprofit mortgage banking at rates which would only include overhead, to name just a few ideas. Door number two is because of the disgraceful bowing by both parties at the altar of the war economy. This obscene spending signed off by both Republicans and Democrats that equals half of your federal tax revenue is slowly bankrupting this empire. With even a modest 25% cut in the military spending and the closing of most of our 1,000-plus overseas military bases, added to the aforementioned savings from a real surtax to the super rich, there would be funding enough for what I already mentioned, plus so much more. Sorry, folks. This circus only wishes to show us the forever food fight between the two parties, hosted by the clown of clowns. Thank you.
Well, food fight sounds about right.
I didn't wake you up, did I?
Yeah, and we got this impeachment circus going on.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Oh, man. Even, you know, as much as they're fighting each other, it still seems like it's basically all a distraction so that the rest of us, the majority, the ones who are not the super rich.
Right, the working class. Yeah.
So we just don't notice, that they're really, attacking us, not each other.
Well, yeah, and that's what the whole idea is. The whole idea of this two-party system. I mean, think about it. All these other countries, even the ones that are advanced countries, I don't mean the banana republics, but all the advanced countries have more than they have a two-party system. They have a multi-party system. But in this country, they made sure to control just two parties, and then they get what they want. You choose from column A or column B, like in a Chinese restaurant, and you get, as Ralph Nader called it, you get twiddle-dum or twiddle-dee. And that's the way it's been, really, you can go back, the 1920s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. It was always a two-party thing, right? And that's how they want it. So, unfortunately, we're not going to have real change to help, working stiffs if the two parties are in power, because the Democrats will feel your pain. They'll help the very indigent more than the Republicans will. That's a fact. But when it comes to people who work for a living, the Democrats are not going to do much, and the Republicans won't do anything. Basically, they'll just keep taking away. So you have, on one end, Chuck, you have a takeaway. The Republicans are taking away from what people already have or need, and the Democrats aren't going to do anything. They're just going to leave it as it is. They're not going to make anything. Look, here's a question I ask people, Chuck. Let's get down to, let's talk about, dollars and cents, not just hypotheticals. I'm sorry, hypotheticals. Well, Chuck Schumer, who's a Democrat, he calls himself a liberal. I went to grade school, junior high school, and high school with Chuck. I know Chuck. I'm not friendly with him, but I know him. He's he's done my family a couple of favors. When I needed my son to get into an advanced school, you know, he qualified, but they only take certain many of kids. Schumer helped to get the kid, you know, into the school. But basically, he's on the banking committee. He's on the Senate banking committee for God knows how long now. Why is it that these credit card companies are still able to charge, like, usurious rates? I mean, 25, 26%, when the prime is, what, 3% or 4% or something? It's criminal, isn't it? Isn't it criminal that, you know, people who don't have, you know, good credit ratings or who don't have a lot of money in the bank and savings, and they have a credit card that if they don't pay it on the, you know, after 30 days when the bill comes in, if they don't pay it, they're going to get hit with up to 27 or 28%, you know, interest charges.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean, the neighborhood where I come from in Brooklyn, you know, they would call them loan sharks, you know, so why didn't Schumer do anything about that? He's been on the committee for like 20 something years now, maybe longer. Why hasn't he talked about it? Nothing, you know, and it's just an example. I mean, look at the health care, you know, I mean, look at the, you know, Obama gets into office, hope and change, and I'm not trying to be mean-spirited here, but I didn't vote. You know, I voted for the Green Party, but, you know, all the people I know waited 2 hours, 3 hours to go online to make that vote in 2008, hope and change, and there were hopes that there'll be a change in the medical system, medical insurance, and he, you know, a lot of Democrats were talking about having Medicare for all. That's in 2008, and he comes into office. And he got $21 million in campaign donations from the healthcare industry. McCain got $7.5 million. Okay? So you think Obama was going to do anything to hurt the private insurance companies? No. He came up with this idea of this, they call it Obamacare. And basically, he opened up the door to the private insurance because what he did was he got them a lot more customers.
Yeah,
that's what he did. Now, the Affordable Care Act did help certain low-income people that weren't being helped, and and even Chomsky, Noam Chomsky, who I have a running debate with him via email in March of 2009 about this bill, this plan, and you know, Chomsky said the famous thing. He said, "Hold your nose and vote for it." He said it's not a great plan, but it'll help. It'll help some people. It'll help people now that aren't being helped.
I think, in fact, in its first year or two, it actually did help a lot of people. In fact, I was one of them. I had not had any insurance since sometime in the 90s. When this new thing came along, I was able to get insurance. I was able to go and get a physical or whatever and find out that basically I was okay. And then they started raising the rates, and you know, I eventually just kind of said, "The heck with this," you know.
Well, but, my wife who was younger than me. Well, even I, you know, I didn't turn 65 until a couple of years ago. So basically, we both had no insurance. You know, we only had hospitalization. We only had hospitalization in case we got, you know, really bad. And it was terrible. Yeah, so when Obamacare came in 08, I did not, and neither my wife, we did not get a major medical plan because it wasn't good. I mean, the major medical plan, because of our income, you know, we didn't get any, you know, government subsidy or help. So basically, the private insurance plans that we could get, even through Obamacare, they were very high deductibles, you know, and they didn't cover a lot. They just weren't very good, you know, you had to pay. I mean, I remember even under Obamacare, I mean, we would have to pay for. Well, for a lousy plan, you'd pay maybe $4,000 or $5,000 a year, but it wouldn't be a good plan.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, well, the high deductible, you're looking at $2,500.
Oh, I know. It's crazy.
$3,000 deductible.
You know, when that came out, I guess I was pretty low income, and so basically I didn't have to pay anything the first year.
Right.
And the second one, I don't know, they might have taken $20 or $30 a month or something, you know. So, but
right,
it was still not really a problem, you know. And then as the insurance companies got more and more entrenched and figured out how to work this new system, man, the rates skyrocketed. Like you say, the deductibles were huge. I am pretty sure that the company I originally went with decided to leave Florida because they couldn't make enough here or something, and other people jumped in and really took advantage. Meanwhile, the legislature here just said, okay, here's a way we can make ourselves more money and make these big insurance and medical and pharmaceutical people more money and get more people into Florida, and the heck with the people that actually need the services.
Yeah, well, let me tell you folks listening about this Medicare scam. And I fell for it because when I first signed up a couple of years ago, I didn't, you know, I'm not into all these details. I'm not good at that. And I found an insurance guy. He sent a postcard or something. So I went to see him, and, you know, he doesn't charge you. He gets his commission. And basically, he steered me, like a lot of people were steered, into a Medicare Advantage plan. And what that really means is that the private insurance company is in charge of it, not the Medicare. The private insurance company runs the whole thing. They decide if you can get an operation, if you don't get an operation. They decide everything. And that's what a lot of Americans who are retired on Medicare, a lot of them are into these medical advantage plans. They have a few good things about them, but basically, the best way to go, and I'll tell you why. Well, I'll give you an example. I called up Florida Healthcare because I want to change, because I was in a plan. I'm still in this medical advantage plan, you know, with Humana. Okay, Humana turned down my ear, nose, and throat doctor twice to do a deviated septum procedure. You know, it's a minor surgery. Twice, they wouldn't let him do it. Twice, they just wouldn't let him do it. So anyway, you know, I want to change, and the way to go for people listening is you make sure that Medicare is your primary insurance, and then you get a supplemental to cover the other 20%. And I contacted Florida. Everybody's telling me Florida Healthcare. My doctor says, oh, they're the best. Well, I call the Florida Healthcare. And the guy, first of all, he's telling me we don't do, supplementals. We only do, Medicare Advantage. That's what we have. Mm-hmm. We have different plans, but they're all Medicare Advantage. And then he's telling me, I said, well, what about if you go in the hospital? And I'm sure I have the same thing now with this medical advantage plan with Humana. I haven't I'm afraid to even check. But he says, you go in the hospital, the first six days you have to pay. And it's usually like $1,000 a day. You know, it's up to $7,000 you have to pay out of pocket, and then it kicks in 100%. So I've been searching around, and I found out that if I made Medicare as my primary, and I got either Aetna or United, because they're in Florida, you know, they write for Florida, and they have this. They have the option where you can, you know, do Medicare as a primary and pick them. And there's a plan N for people that are not too ill. Anyway, it comes out to an extra like $140 a month that you would pay in addition to what you're paying now, you know, through your Social Security check. But it's $185 a year deductible. And after that, everything's covered. So if, God forbid, you had to go into the hospital under that plan, You pay your, up to $185, and then everything's covered, okay? Mm-hmm. And it comes out to $140 a month, which is like, you do it by 12 months, so that's the extra money you're paying. But, and also your co-pays are like half. Like I said, I think co-pay with Humana is like $40 to go to any sort of a specialist. With them, it's like $20. So basically, you know, and you can go anywhere in the country, or let's say the state of Florida, any doctor that takes Medicare has to accept you if you have this other plan. But they don't tell you that when they sign you up for these Advantage plans. So I'm just telling people a little insight, you know, that people don't know about.
Yeah.
I don't know what you have, but.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I have some kind of Part B supplement thing. It might be a medical advantage. I don't really know. It's Humana.
It's probably medical advantage, yeah.
But basically, I picked it because they pay half of what would otherwise be taken out of my Social Security for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is that this is the problem in this country. We shouldn't even be having
exactly you know, this should not be. We shouldn't have to come up with okay. Do we want do we want this crook or that one or the other one? It should
be.
Hey, you need something. You go get it. You know, it should not be. These private insurance companies that are just making a huge profit, and they basically taken away all the profit for all of the decent doctors. You know, the only ones that are actually making any money are the ones that pretty much don't take any of the plans.
Yeah, and they treat the you know very rich people you know who can afford
exactly
it.
But
here's the thing
they don't treat you and me
right, but here's the thing, is as you said, we shouldn't be having this conversation, because to think about what I'm saying, when they developed Medicare for people over 60, 65, I don't think they included in there, and I hope they didn't. I have to do research, but I don't think they included that if you're on Medicare, that you got to fork over thousands. You got to pay for the complete hospital stay until it reaches a limit of $6,000-$7,000. I mean, that's not what we thought when we thought we were going on Medicare. Didn't you think so that we were going on Medicare that our health care was covered, right?
Pretty much.
That's what we thought.
Yeah.
And look what happened. Little by little, the private insurance companies kept pushing their way through the door. And now this is what we have, Medicare Advantage plans and with all kinds of hype and all kinds of whistles and bells. And, you know, basically, it's ridiculous, Chuck. I hope everybody listening understands that we should have national health insurance without needing the private insurance company. And what I hate about what these Democrats are doing, these idiots, when they debate, they're making it sound like if Sanders doesn't explain it properly, but he doesn't want private insurance companies involved. But you don't have to say we're going to outlaw or we're going to push them. No, all you say is we're going to compete with the private insurers. Right? Medicare will compete with the private. If you want to have a private insurer, that's fine. You want to go on Medicare, you go on Medicare. But Medicare won't have the private insurers, and the private insurers aren't going to have Medicare. That's all. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants a level playing field. They want a free. You know, Chuck, don't you love how these right-wingers throw the words around, free market, right? Oh, let the market. Yeah. Let the market. Before we go, let me give you an example. 15 years ago, with the you know with the cable TV mess, I was writing a piece because I was fed up with these cable companies and Time Warner here, and they were being sued. They weren't providing the service they promised. All this, they had lawsuits against them. So I asked the lawyer for the city, "Are there any cities that have their own cable?" He goes, "Yeah, there's different ones in the country." He gave me one. Okay, Noonan, Georgia. So I call the guy up. small city, and he ran the cable. And he said, we used to have Cox TV was the franchisee, and they wouldn't wire outside of town. Anybody in the rural area could not get cable, and they kept raising their rates. They raised their rates up to 29. This is going back 15 years. They raised their rates up to $29.95 a month. And we came in as a city, and we opened. We did our own cable business, the nonprofit, and we were charging $19.95, and we wired everybody who wanted it. And, you know, we wired the whole, you know, outside of town. He said, "You know what happened? Right after we opened up, we started. Cox went down to $21.95 a month."
Well, of course.
So from $29.95, they went down to I think it was $21.95 or $22. They dropped their charge because Noonan, Georgia was now competing with them. Because, you know, think about it. The cable companies are not creating anything, you know, they're just bringing the signal into your house.
Yeah, right. Right.
That's all they're doing. They're not making the shows. And why do we need private contractors to bring a signal into a house when the city can do it? So anyway, it's like the mail. I mean, they want to privatize. Look, it's bad. All the complaints I have about the post, I have so many complaints about the post office. So believe me when I say that. But you know what? I never would want to see it privatized.
Exactly.
It would be worse.
Exactly.
It would be worse. Likewise. It would be worse.
Yeah.
You know? And now with the, as you know, with the recycling, because, you know, my wife and I are heavy, we're very heavy into recycling. Now you heard that they won't take glass.
Really?
Why? Because, it's not profitable. No, really. Huh. They won't take, they want you to throw your glass in the garbage. And the glass, according to the figures I studied, glass does not degrade naturally. It might take 1,000 years for that bottle of glass.
Uh-huh.
And they won't let you do the recycling with the glass anymore. And you know about the plastic, how bad it is now. I mean, China doesn't want to take any more plastic from us.
Yeah.
You know? And so as you know, the real answer is I go into Publix tonight to get a pulled pork dinner. You know, they have the little dinners in some of the Publix stores. And they have all cardboard. No more plastic. You know how they have the styrofoam and the other crap?
Yeah, right. Yep.
Now they have the cardboard, you know, containers, which is really good. And
that
think
is
about
a definite improvement. Yep.
Yeah, and we should go back to the old. Now with the glass, I can't say this to you. Because,
and with glass,
but I think
with glass,
I
we
think
should recycle the thing. I mean, remember they used to be a deposit on the bottle.
Yes,
you take it
they
back.
They won't do it anymore. It's not profitable for them. Well, you know what I think?
Oh, well.
I think if they got away from plastic, like let's say containers, they got rid of. And they put everything back to glass or to a cardboard, you know, containers. I think that there would be, I think they would find a way to recycle all the glass at a profit, you know.
I think you're right.
So this
you know
is
what
we're
thank
living
you.
In.
Yeah. Thank you. Once again, we have come up to
Listen
to
Revolution
break,
Radio
at
freedomslips.com.
Thanks so much
we'll
for joining me.
Right
and this was a pretty interesting discussion, and I look forward to more. Next week.
Hey everyone,
and give
it's
your
Barbara
station
Jean
a
Lindsay,
okay,
the Cosmic
folks?
Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Ohio Exopolitics will be on from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A. Mark Schneider will have guests on that will discuss many important topics, including the state of the world today. However, much of the show will be dedicated to the writings of Edward Albert Meyer. Let me read a short passage from one of his writings. Love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. All of nature in its indescribable splendor is nothing but the love of creation, which is expressed visibly. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. Please join Mark on Ohio Exopolitics from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A.
All right, thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Our next segment starts with Azura Crispino. Azura is a prison abolitionist, prison activist, and I recorded her earlier, and we're going to play that right about now.
Hello, New American Dream listeners. This is Azura Crispino with Prison Abolition Prisoner Support. And today I'm mostly going to talk to you about the case of Rodney Reed, which if you haven't heard about means that you're probably hiding under a rock. But before we get there, I'd like to give you a quick update about my friend Greg Curry. So Greg was found guilty of having killed someone during the famous Lucasville riot. He's long held that he is innocent of that particular crime. After 28 years in administrative segregation at Ohio State Penitentiary, he was transferred to Toledo Correctional. Well, he's still mostly on lockdown, but is somewhat in general population. Well, about 2 months ago, they accused him of having had somebody mail him drugs on an envelope that he allegedly self-addressed. Now, I know Greg personally. I've visited him several times, and I can say this without any trouble. Greg is not an idiot. So there was absolutely no way that he would send somebody an address envelope and tell that person to mail drugs to him. This is clearly a farce. So we have been asking for people to call into Ohio Legal Department, in part because he was heard on this case, on this ticket, by a serious misconduct panel, which is supposed to include people outside of the prison on it. And the last time that he was heard by a serious misconduct panel with outside members, the outside member threw it out. Well, this time, Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections is claiming that they don't need an outside member anymore, even though the policy on their own website still says that they're supposed to have an outside member. So please write Greg Curry. I'm sure he'd love a postcard after 2 months in the hole. And be on the lookout for ways to call either Ohio DRC Legal or to call to the classification office. At this point, what we want is for people to call classification, not increase his security level, and to interstate compact him out of Ohio. Now, that is a drastic measure. Obviously, Greg has family members and friends in Ohio that try to visit him when they can, but he has come to the conclusion that the only way that he is going to be treated fairly while he is incarcerated is to be moved to another state. So be on the lookout. I will be sending New American Dream some information on the numbers to call as well as a script. The next thing that I would like to discuss with you is the story of Rodney Reed. And to have this conversation, I have brought a guest with me. His name is Mark Clements. Mark knows what it's like to be wrongfully incarcerated for a crime that he didn't commit, and he has been working on the Rodney Reed case for over 11 years now. So please, Mark, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Mark Clements, and I previously came into this case as administrator over the campaign to end the death penalty, and just learning of what took place in Rodney's case is mind-blowing, considering the fact that most of the evidence in the case clearly shows that Rodney Reed is innocent, and Rodney has been basically incarcerated since the year of 1996. And, you know, the bottom line of it is just way too long for a person to have to sit on death row with evidence that clearly exonerates them.
So for those of you who are unfamiliar with the case, there was a young woman named Stacy Stites. She was 19 years old when she was murdered. Now, Rodney's defense has always been that his DNA was found on her corpse was from a consensual sexual relationship and that he had seen her the night before. Ms. Stites was engaged to Jimmy Fennell, who was a police officer in Bastrop at the time. And there have been several reasons to believe that he's the real killer. The one that I find most persuasive is that a woman who had taken a life insurance policy application from Ms. Stites came forward to say that while Ms. Stites was filling out the life insurance application, she was asking Jimmy Fennell, why do I even need a life insurance policy? I'm only 19 years old. And that during that conversation, he basically said, well, if you ever cheat on me, I'm going to kill you and nobody's ever going to know that I did it. So that seems like really important evidence. She had tried to bring this forward during the trial, but nobody would answer her call. The second most persuasive piece of evidence to me is simply the fact that Jimmy Fennell had motive. Right? If he found out that his fiance was running around on him, and especially, unfortunately, in the 90s in Bastrop, knowing that his white fiance was running around with a black man is not something that he would have seen as being something that he could allow to continue. And then the third piece of information that I think is most relevant is that Fennell went on to become an officer with Georgetown Police. So Bastrop is east of Austin. Georgetown is a north Austin suburb. And while he was on the police force, he kidnapped a woman and sexually assaulted her while he was on duty. Now, the woman that he assaulted has recently come out and issued a statement basically saying that she believes Fennell to be the real killer on the basis of the fact that he kidnapped her and assaulted her in broad daylight in front of everybody. And so she's basically saying, look, as a person who was a victim of this man, I can tell you that the way that he handled that situation, this was not his first time hurting a woman. Now, Fennell was convicted of that crime, served 10 years, and there has been a prisoner, former prisoner, who's come forward, Arthur Snow, who says that while they were incarcerated together, that Fennell confessed to him that he had had to kill his fiance. And, well, let's just say that Fennell's exact words are not words that I'm going to repeat on the radio, but that he had said that he had had to kill her because of whom she was cheating on him with. So, Mark, what do you think are the most compelling things about this case?
Well, I think that also, in addition to the life insurance policy that Fennell, at least he had opened and taken out against Stacey Stites. He also told his colleague, Officer Davis, that if his girlfriend ever cheated on him, that he would kill her and that he would strangle her. Well, Stacey Stites was found strangled. I think also what is very compelling about the case is the pathologist in the case, the timeline of death. He went off of basically what Fennell told him and other police officers told him. And
the pathologist.
Yes. Pathologist. And I just think that that is very compelling, considering the fact that the timeline of death, it lined up with what he was only told by the police officers, and it's just showing that upon retesting that she had been killed, I would say 3 to 4 hours before the original time that officials revealed that she had been killed. She was just basically, the timeline states about 3 a.m. in the morning. Jimmy Fennell states that he was with her and they went to bed approximately at 9 p.m. and that they were in the bed. Well, the new pathologist examinations clearly show that she had been killed between the hours of approximately 11 p.m. or 12 midnight. And that was the time that Jimmy Fennell claims that he was in the presence with Stacey Stites.
Another thing I find really interesting about this case is that the implement that was used to strangle her, a belt, the courts continue to refuse to test for DNA. So if you are interested in finding out more about this case, we strongly urge you to watch the documentary, A Plea for Justice. It's freely available on YouTube, and it will delve into many of these details even more. But if you are persuaded, Mark, for our listeners, what's the best way for them to help support the freedom of Rodney Reed?
Well, they can go to the hashtag, and the hashtag is Free Rodney Reed. And they can go to that hashtag and they can sign one of the three petitions that is calling for Rodney Reed to be granted a reprieve. I say that we must go a little farther than a reprieve. I think that he needs to be let out of prison based off of the newly discovered evidence that shows that he is 100% innocent.
So as a reminder, you can also go to freerodneyreed.com if you don't have a social media presence. And there's a really good setup there. Basically, it will talk you through how to make the phone calls, okay? And Sean King, very famous activist and reporter, has also set up a thing where basically he will talk you through how to call the governor, who has the ability to grant him clemency or a stay of execution to test the DNA, to call the Board of Parole and Pardons, which also can recommend clemency, to call the Bastrop District Attorney, Gertz, who has the ability to say, no, we no longer seek the death penalty in this case. So there are lots of different ways for you to call, to sign the petition, to physically mail in a letter, but it really does look like Texas is set to execute another innocent man. His execution date is November 20th. There is a clemency hearing on November 14th. So there are not very many days left. And go ahead, Mark.
And I would suggest that the people take out of their time maybe 5 minutes at most, to call the number to the governor's office. That telephone number is 512-463-1782. Once again, 512-463-1782 and ask the governor to please have a heart and stop this execution of Rodney Reed. Also, request to the governor to free, that means pardon Mr. Reed off of death row and to do that immediately.
Well, thank you, New American Dream listeners, and I will see you again next month.
Thank you, both of you. I really appreciate having you on my show, and talk to you next month, Azura.
All right, sounds good. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Mark Clement and Azura Crispino, for keeping us informed on this very important, these important developments. That phone number, if you want to call, call to try to get the stop the execution of Rodney Reed, 512-463-1782. My next guest of the evening, also recorded earlier, is Frank Cordero. Frank joins me each week from the Des Moines Catholic Worker. And I spoke with Frank earlier, and here we're going to hear that whole call.
Chuck.
Well, hi, Frank.
This must be Thursday.
yeah, last time I checked.
Yeah. Well, I was a couple of days ahead of myself on Tuesday when I called you last.
Yeah.
You were late, and I wasn't going to be able to talk to you. So thanks for calling, and that gave me a couple more days to null on stuff. I'm we're putting out our November issue of the Via Pacis. We've gone down to 3 issues a year instead of 4, which kind of sorely regret. Hopefully we'll be able to get back to 4. And it's our beg letter where we rely on folks. I think I've mentioned that before. I might even have read the letter to you. I just want to talk about the angst that I am at, 40 plus years doing this. Living on the beg and painfully mindful that we beg from mostly liberal, progressive thinking people. They're the most generous to us because that's where I come from and my roots are, and we have a lot in common, you know. On the other hand, I personally have grown really weary and tired of liberals working with them for peace and justice.
Yeah.
Their complete absence, you know, of understanding what Jess and Ruby were doing and what they're about, and their inability to support them, take any risk at all. It was so revelatory these last few years, along with our own drone efforts. It just has told me I'm just so tired. But then this is the yearly discipline and the kind of worlds I have to live in, you know. And I'm reminded of Gandhi, no less, who famously is quoted as saying, "It takes a lot of rich people to keep me in poverty." And I have to say the same. We rely on the generosity of people who, they're not rich, but they have abundance of stuff and enough spare cash to help us keep this place going. Plus, they come and we volunteer stuff, everything. I mean, it's just it's an amazing effort. I just have to kind of like always be on show telling them thank you, which is like, really, I should be. I mean, it's not like I'm complaining. This discipline of being grateful, even to liberals, is keeping me in the ballpark. I just I just don't have enough time to work with liberals with the issues we're dealing with. I'd rather work with the those who see this stuff as discipleship and a need to engage in serious risk-taking for the kingdom and the planet. So that's where I feel torn. I've written the letter. It'll be in the Via Pacis. I'm hustling. I'm starting to beg money. We're running at a $10,000 a year deficit. If it weren't for the the recent bequeathed things from friends of mine, my aunt and a great priest friend, Father Jack Kisling, my Aunt Mary, all those great people. It's all equity time for this guy. I'm actually I am the fat cow. I have equity. I that's what, you know, they may be suffering this community under what we call, or I call, founder's disease. Huh. I think I've mentioned this. It's a great concept. I hope it's not a real psychotic thing, because I'm just made it up. It's what it means, what I mean by it is nothing scientific. It's just that anybody who stays 40 years at any place is going to be the person who's going to lead their founder's disease. They're going to have the most influence on the place. And if they're still there, the people just have to work around them like a dead corpse. I mean, you come into Des Moines at the Des Moines Catholic Worker, you immediately understand Frank, the guy who started it, is still here. Right. And he's going a lot of the shots because he's got all this equity of time and experience. So, you know, that has some good parts to it, and it has some bad parts to it. It's the founder's disease thing, as I'm talking, and everybody suffers it. If you're in a football program and coaching or teaching, or you're the CEO of some kind of nonprofit, or you're the fucking president, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe the president's different.
Well, Frank, it's kind of an interesting term. I mean, there's kind of a dual meaning built in there. You've got the founder of the organization, you know, the person who started it and who founded it. But at the same time, things, an organization can founder like a horse when it's been too long, too stagnant. So there's an interesting, dichotomy of meaning there.
Oh, I all of that, but you know, it's rich with those kinds of meanings. But I'm living in I've stayed too long in this one place, and so I'm not like, you know, Saint Francis. Towards the end of his life, there was great divides. They wanted to kick him out. He was crazy. With Jeff Dietrich, God bless Jeff Dietrich. You know, he's like 7 years ahead of me in this scene, and he's in his 70s, and he's having a rough time. And I visited him this summer, and we're both people. He's been in his place 50 years. I've been at my place 45. Whatever, it's crazy. What I learned and passed on to him was, we got to treat these young people nice who come to live with us, because A, they're either going to be writing our epitaph, or B, wiping our ass. And in either case, you want them to be nice. You don't want them to hate you. So that's the operative thing. We suffer under founder's disease, and we're the founders. So we have to figure out how to, leave room for people to have ownership and take over and get out of the way.
Yeah.
That's kind of the challenge. Well, those are the things I'm ruminating this week as we enter into, clearly fall and winter. It's like almost, it's chilly. It's 30s, cold, biting wind.
Yeah, that's definitely chilly for me.
Yes.
We're still in the 80s down here, but
enjoy it. Yes. Now that's why you're there. Now everyone remembers why Florida exists.
Exactly.
Yes, of course. Yes. All right. Is that enough, brother?
Well, I guess so. It's always too short.
Fair enough. I do
enjoy visiting with you each week, Frank. I always look forward to it. Thank you so much.
Thank you again. Have a good week. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You too. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's always fun to visit with Frank Cordero. I actually got some feedback, which hardly ever happens, and I'm going to share it with you. My friend Lisa Wellborn said, "Hi, Chuck. I'm enjoying the show, but need to correct a few things to do with Humana's Medicare Advantage plan. The cost of seeing a specialist is $5 for this year, and that continues into 2020 as well. There's no copayment for hospital stays. Years ago, there was a charge for X number of days, but that's not the case now. I just checked my annual notice for 2020. That's for Humana Gold Plus. Please pass that on to Philip Ferrugio." So I did send it by email to Philip, but I also thought I would tell the listeners. And Lisa, thank you so much for giving me this quick feedback. It's always good to know when people are out there listening. And anytime someone has a correction to something on our show, I welcome that because I want to be as accurate as possible. All right. As we near the station break this time, let me just remind everyone, this is listener-supported radio, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com is a very good network, and they do have a lot of shows on pretty much 24/7, so don't forget to support them. Talk to you on the other side of the station break.
Find some comfort at Willow's World, a variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles, a show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Decentralization and bank annihilation. Bitcoin, Litecoin, Mycoin, Yourcoin, blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern, Studio A.
right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at RevolutionRadioFreedomSlips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Well, welcome back to the New American Dream Radio Show. Our final guest of the evening is Karen Katowski. Karen is a former lieutenant colonel in the Marines, and she was in the Pentagon on 9/11. She has run for office in Virginia, and I'm going to be adding her on right now. She always has some very interesting viewpoint to share with us. So, okay.
Hello?
Well, hello, Karen. It's Chuck Gregory, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you are on the air.
All right. And I guess I'll start out with the time zone, because it feels different. It feels much later than it should be for some reason. But
yeah, really.
Yeah, but now I guess I'll talk about what we did in Virginia. On Tuesday, we had elections. Of course, a lot of states did, and Virginia made national news because our state house and Senate went Democrat from being narrowly Republican. Now they're narrowly Democrat, and of course, we've made the news in the past several months for a number of things. Our governor, for example, posing in a blackface and next to a guy wearing a KKK outfit in his college yearbook, and it wasn't his undergrad; it was his medical school college yearbook. He's the governor of Virginia. Northam is a medical doctor. He's a highly educated guy, served in the military. Somehow when he ran, this bit of information never became public during his race. It's something that after we elected him, they found out. But he survived that. Of course, we have our vice, what do you call it, the vice governor, lieutenant governor, and he's been charged with rape by a bunch of people. Not charged, I should say, but the part of the Me Too thing. People have come up and said, women have come up, a couple of them, maybe more than two, and said that he's forced himself on them sexually in some way and various things. And usually, and this happened some years ago. So again, it's a lot like what we saw with Kavanaugh. In the public eye, and then all of a sudden things that should have been said and charges that should have been made immediately. That's my idea. If somebody hurts you, I think you have to take action immediately. You either deal with it directly by killing them, or then if you can't do that, you go to the courts, right? And you do that right away. You don't sit there and suffer and feel awful and have all those ramifications for years and years. But anyway, it doesn't work that way in politics, apparently. Or Hollywood, they wait, and then finally, it becomes, I guess, useful for someone to support these people in making their charges. So anyway, that happened to the lieutenant governor. Now, the attorney general is also a Democrat, and he hasn't done anything that any other Democrat wouldn't do. He doesn't have any real problems that I'm aware of, except maybe I think he said in support of the governor that he also wore blackface once. But that was like a moral support thing. I'm not kidding. You could make this up. You could not make this up if you wanted to. It would sound so untrue. But anyway, that's Virginia. So we already made the news with all of those stories about our Democratic leadership. And then we just had our elections on Tuesday, and we went full on Democrat. So a lot of people in our state who are Republicans or independents or Libertarians or Greens. Even the Greens have to fear the Democrats, I think. I think they have to be careful. But anyway, a lot of people are concerned that the next couple of years of this leadership down in Richmond will, do things that they don't like. And the thing is, it's a lot of it is emotional. You know, it's so emotional. And that's what politics do. You know, people don't really look at the facts. And I'm going to share two facts, and I'm going to tell another story about our local county elections, which I think is pretty interesting. And it is kind of like gossip, but it's very interesting. It's like in our local county, Facebook is like lighting up over this. So I'll get to that later. But in terms of the things I wanted to share about the emotions and things of politics, people don't want to look at the facts. But I'm going to share two facts that I think are important. And one is, and this is from Etienne de la Boite from 500 years ago, and he was like 26 years old or 25 years old when he wrote this, The Politics of Civil Disobedience. And he pointed out that small numbers of people, even with weapons, even with small armies, cannot control large numbers of people, unless those large numbers of people consent and willingly agree to be controlled. That's the short version of his very wonderful essay. And it's true. It's true. And I mean, if you look throughout history, at various times when things have changed, it's because the majority of people who had been ruled by one minority decided not to be anymore. And it didn't matter. It didn't matter if they had a democratic form of government. It's not about your form of government. You can get rid of kings and tyrants and dictators, and you get rid of presidents, and you can get rid of heck, even people in the largest governing set of organizations in this whole country, which is homeowners associations. And if you get a little tyrant there, if you got a little tyrant in place, at some point you can reject that. Now, with homeowners associations, oftentimes what they do is they just sell everything and they move out. And guess what? That'll kill the HOA. Especially if you sell low and put the word out that, you know, this isn't a place that any right-minded person wants to live in, yada, yada. So it's, you know, we have ways of not submitting. And of course, you know, we should practice that. It's a good thing not to submit to concentrated power anywhere. Anyway, yeah. So, but people don't think that. They go, oh my God, the Democrats are in charge. Oh my God. Governor Blackface and the rapist and all these guys are going to do terrible things, and they're going to abort babies, you know, whenever they want to. Well, you know, that's a touchy issue, but in fact, they're not going to do that, right? Because they're not going to abort my baby, right? If I had one, I mean, this is, you know, it's a little bit reasonably, but they're not doing that. And it's a marginal, I think it's a couple of votes. I mean, it's a clear majority in both houses, but it's marginal. We had the Republicans had it. Not that they were much different than the Democrats in many ways, but they had this marginal advantage before Tuesday, and then so next session the Democrats had this marginal advantage. Now the other thing is the number of people that voted in the state was pretty good turnout for an off-year election. They have elections every year for something, and it was a good turnout. But actually, in our state, I don't know if I have the numbers right, I think it's about 40,000 or something like that, maybe 400,000 more Republicans actually voted than did Democrats. And we don't have party registration. We're saying those Republican candidates received in their entirety many more votes, a significant percentage higher number of votes than did the Democrats. But we had been redistricted. The state got redistricted, and it increased a great many more Democrat favorable districts. Some of which prevailed in Democratic elections, and then some Republicans did. I mean, we had one Republican. He didn't get on the ballot. Nick Freitas, nobody's going to know him, but he's actually nationally known in some ways. But Nick is a guy who. I don't know what happened. There's multiple stories, so I won't bore you with it all, but he didn't get his name put in for the office that he held. He's a delegate, and his name, his paperwork was not received in the proper format on the right time. So he appealed it along with several other candidates who something like that had happened to them too, but the Democrats run the state. So they rejected his appeal and they said, no, your name is not going to be on the ballot. And no other name will be able to be put on the ballot either for the Republicans. So he ran his race against a Republican. I mean, sorry, he's a Republican. He ran it against a Democrat. She was on the ballot, and he conducted a write-in campaign, and he prevailed with 14% more. Yeah, he had like what did he have, 64 or I don't know what it was. He was 14 points above her. So that was good. And it was a write-in campaign. And his name is Freitas, and it has E before I before E. I'm not even sure. So it's not the easiest thing to spell. And but he also, of course, now he is nationally known for something. He's got some connections. Some money came in to support his race, and he hired the person who got Murkowski elected, Senator Murkowski of Alaska, elected on her write-in back in the day. Where she had said she wasn't going to run. And then when she saw the people that were going to run, she didn't like them. So she said, oh, I am going to run. And they said, it's too late to be at the ballot. And she ran. I don't know if anybody remembers that. But with the person that was helped her do that, and that person came to Virginia and helped Nick Freitas. But it was pretty simple, and anybody could have figured it out. You know, they had cards that they handed people and all kinds of other stuff. And he worked hard, and he was already a – he was the incumbent, and there is some incumbent advantage, and it was a conservative area, and he's a conservative. So anyway, he won that. So that was good, and we're happy. But anyway, so people are like wrapped around the axle about all the terrible things that are going to happen. And it's like, seriously, first off, if it's really terrible, I'm not complying with it. You know, obviously these people don't own us. We're not,
right.
I always talk about how we're farm animals, but that is not, I don't mean literally, we're not literally farm animals. Yeah. So we don't have to, when push comes to shove, we don't have to obey these people. They're not our masters, you know, and right. Like we're the dog that the master says, here, do this, do that. No, it doesn't work that way. It's politics. It's an equal relationship. And actually, it's not equal. The people have more power always than do the minority sitting in some capital somewhere, even if that capital is just the local capital, because we have to consent to be governed. And, you know, it's funny that the founders, you know, say, oh, well, consent to the governed, the consent to the governed. Yeah, but actually, it's actually more true than you think it is. You cannot be governed unless you consent. It's not like we have the right to consent and we want to vote, so that means that we consented. No, I mean, my God, voting has nothing to do with your consent. Voting is a participatory, you know, religious service of democracy. I mean, you know, it's a tradition, you know, take the wafer, right? That's what the voting is. But the actual, and we try to, you know, we say, oh, you vote and you consent through your vote. Well, actually, no, you don't. But it sounds good and people buy that. But really, we consent through the way we live our lives and what we will tolerate. And so, you know, we, and maybe that makes people uncomfortable, and maybe that's why they're scared. Oh, the Democrats are taking over. Or if it was another state where they're afraid of Republicans, they could say, oh, the Republicans are taking over. But, you know, you consent to what you get. And, yes, it might make you feel a little uncomfortable, and maybe your neighbors might won't agree with you all the time, but it's all right. So anyway, that's that. But at a local level, so we also had a pretty heated supervisor election. And the guy we wanted to win was a Republican, and he did win. And his opponent ran, and they ran a very pleasant campaign. They were supported by people that are known not to be pleasant, but they restrained themselves, and they ran a pretty above-board campaign, only a few little bad, dirty tricks. And actually, if you ever watch local elections, dirty tricks, man, they start at home.
Yeah, I mean, that's
you know,
true.
we learn very close to home about dirty tricks, and we say, oh, you know, the federal and state politics are nasty. No, the local politics are probably the worst, because they know everything about you, and they would use it, and they fear you because they know you. You're their a person that they, you know, and you may actually take something from them. I mean, this is that, you know, when you're that local. But anyway, so they ran a good, decent, basic campaign, kind of low key in some ways. And the individual opposing, he ran as an independent, but he was fully endorsed and supported by the Democratic Party and the liberal Republicans in the Republican Party. So it was a close race, but the guy won by about 250 votes, and that was good. Mm. But here's what caused the drama, okay? So the guy who lost sent a very vivid email to his Democratic Party sponsor, and explaining, you know, don't worry, you know, this county is 70% alt-right. Talk about your language that will inflame people. I think some people were triggered by that. And he went on to say about how people aren't really educated around here, and we are coming from Northern Virginia, and we're going to keep coming. And those of us who've come already, we consider ourselves the pioneers, and we're going to pave the way for you guys to come. And we like living in Shenandoah County because we can go eat at our favorite restaurants and shop at our favorite stores up in D.C., but then still come back and enjoy the mountains. And we're going to own this place, and these rubes basically are going to do what we tell them. But it didn't happen this time, but don't worry, it will. And anyway, I'm paraphrasing. Well.
I'm sure that will improve his chances next time.
So you can imagine. So what happened was, this was an email to his Democratic supporters through the party chair or whoever it is, somebody runs their Facebook page. Well, they put the whole message on their Democratic County, Shenandoah County Democratic Facebook page. Well, they put it there. Well, of course, you know, what do you think Republicans do? We monitor that page, right? So people got it, and they saw it, and they figured that first they didn't believe it because it was so arrogant and it was so caustic. But it was it was not caustic on purpose. It was just the superior attitude that was, you know, it was just dripping with really hate is not too it's not too strong of a word. I mean, it was just amazing. And the guy is very low key, so they said, "Oh no, he couldn't have written it." But of course, he did write it. And anyway, so we captured it, or some people did, and shared it around. And then the Democratic Party, yanked it from their page. And then he published an apology, saying that even though he didn't say this, but basically he said, even though you read the entire thing in context, you took it out of context. Because the real context is you were supposed to see that. But he issued this weak apology, which kind of confirmed that he did do it. Because some people who knew him said, oh, he's so nice, he would never do that. But he was in political mode when he was so nice. You know, this is after the election. Anyway, it's a big drama, and it's people are passing it around, and it's inflaming the left-right divide, and the, make it farther left, you know, the far right and the far left divide or whatever.
Yeah, right.
And it's all local, and it's all, you know, people feel bad, and this is compounded by the fact that some people are afraid because they don't really understand that we always consent every minute of our lives to whatever we're putting up with, and that includes politics. They think, oh, God, the Democrats are going to, you know, force abortions and steal all our guns. Oh, my God, there's not enough... There's not enough government employees to steal anybody's guns in this. Right. I mean, they can't even get the guns out of innocent D.C. or Baltimore. They're not going to steal anybody's guns.
I mean, were anybody's position, it couldn't be enforced. But
that's exactly right. Know. Well, it's like say no to drugs, you know? I mean, Nancy Reagan said don't have drugs. And I think Nixon said, let's have a war against drugs.
All we have
is a proliferation of drugs. We have more availability and more choice and cheaper drugs than we've ever had any time, except yesterday when we had slightly less, and today we have slightly less. I mean, that's the trend of when the government tries to do something. So we actually probably should say we should probably have them make war on guns, you know, and try to get rid of them. Because every time the government tries to oppose something, I mean, I hate to say this, but the numbers show that LBJ's war on poverty... There were poverty, and they had the numbers of how many people were afflicted by it, and at what levels they were. I mean, were they on the street? Were they not eating? You know, I mean, they knew there were definitely clearly poor people.
Yeah,
but the number of poor people, even though our standards of measurement have changed, has in a fundamental level has increased. We have more people that aren't doing as well as they should. People are unable to raise their kids and give them what they need to give them. All kinds of problems. And so this is all after a war on poverty. So I say the government should declare a war on privately owned handguns and rifles and whatever else they want, because that means we'll get more of them. if it follows the way the war on drugs and the war on poverty and some of these other things go. What? So anyway, but people don't believe, they don't think of it that way. They take it personal, and they're very upset. So there are a lot of scared people, and when they read that guy's email or his message to the Democrats about how they were going to take over one way or the other and get rid of us. I mean, it really was, it was kind of harsh. I'll tell you, even our congressman has seen this email, and it's only two days after the election. Yeah. Uh-huh. And the congressman has already seen it, and he's shocked by it too. Of course, he's a Republican, so he's probably saying he's shocked. He's just shocked. He can't believe a Democrat would say this.
Well, of course, yeah.
You know, but it's just one of those, you know, people are scared, and it does reflect, and I think it connects to what we've probably talked about here before about the whole divide between people, you know, the inability to, we don't see people, we see them as the other, many of them as other. Yeah. Even though we're trying to accept everybody and have room and space for everybody to be who they want to be and express their opinions, have freedom of speech, but really, it's not working that way. Seems like we're opposing each other, and we don't even understand the other people. And I'm not saying a conservative couldn't say and hasn't said really bad stuff about a Democrat in general, but what this guy wrote, it really hit hard to a lot of people because he lumped us together. So I guess if that's the lesson, we should probably try not to lump people together as much as we've been doing.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't know if it's possible.
Well, I really think it is possible, but the way that we're approaching things these days is not the way that is going to solve it. We're busy demonizing the other side when really there is no other side. These are people too.
That's
right. Everybody, they have a lot more in common with us than differences.
Yes, it's true. And I think, I'm a libertarian. From a libertarian perspective, if people will, if we can all agree that we are kind of, and people do not agree at this, but let's say we could all agree that we kind of have some autonomy over our own personal lives. And I think most people feel, and then extend that to our families, but really just ourselves. And we can consent or not consent. It's wonderful, like in the whole man-woman relationship or in that arena, I think the whole country agrees, well, obviously consent is a part of it, right? You don't do stuff to other people unless they consent, you have respect for what people's wishes are. And, we don't do bad things to people, but when it comes to government, we don't extend that way of thinking. But of course, when government gets in our way and does rude and evil things, we should never consent. And if we behave this way as humans, as a whole, regardless of what our visions or ideology were, if we behave this way, there wouldn't be these big wars, because these wars are fought by people who have no idea what's going on. They don't know why they're there on either side. For the most part, unless you've been invaded if our country goes and invades the country, they probably know more about what they're doing than our soldier knows about what he or she is doing.
Exactly.
But again, they should not have consented to that. And I this is a whole nother issue, but oftentimes since we've gone to an all volunteer military, and I support an all volunteer military, I do not support any type of draft, because that obviously removes any consent. That's slavery. I think we have the 13th Amendment for that. That's why I don't believe in any draft. But they have used that. Oh, you volunteered for it. You volunteered for it. Now you got to go kill some Afghanis. You got to go kill some Iraqis. You got to go kill some Syrians, some Turks, some Libyans, whatever we're on to next, Koreans, if you want to. And it's like, well, you consented. Well, but that's the misuse of consent. It's like,
Exactly.
Well, we don't tolerate that in the court case. Let's say a woman is married, she divorces her husband. He comes back. They've been living separately. He breaks into her house, or even he doesn't. He says, "Come on in," and then he rapes her. What do we say?
Yeah.
You don't say, "Well, you consented before. You were married to him for 4 years. You had sex with him before. Well, no, we don't do it that way. We say, "No, she did not consent." And yet in the military, volunteer military, it's like, well, you consented, you signed in. And it's the same goes with these votes, We have these elections and say, well, you voted for Trump or you voted for the other guy. That's how it goes. See you later. Talk to me in 4 years. You consented.
Yeah, right.
Wrong. Yeah. We did not. We should take that idea of consent and incorporate it into our daily lives every single day and consent to what we believe in and what is good and what is peaceful. And I think that is a shared. I don't know there's any party that's advocating war right now. Now, the politicians are advocating war every day of the week, but the actual parties, the Democratic Party does not say, yes, we support war. And the Republican Party says, we like defense, but we don't support, war.
Mm-hmm.
Stupid war. So, if we can solve this problem pretty easy, I think, just by teaching everyone about consent and making, and not just about consent over how your body can be used. You know, it's like we limit it to that. How my mind can be
right.
used. I get consent over that? Yeah, I do. Yeah. My choices. Uh-huh. That's, I can, so if we can incorporate that, I think we'll come, we'll be in a better place. But, yeah. So
well,
anyway, but yeah, a lot of angst going on in my local little county here in Virginia.
It sure sounds
days.
It.
pretty fun, pretty crazy.
Karen,
not really the norm.
This has been a fun discussion, and this whole idea of consent and of denying consent is a very powerful one, and we're going to have to talk about it another time because we are totally out
yeah.
of time right now. Thank you so much. And thank you for agreeing to be on the Thanksgiving show. I look forward to talking to you
good.
Then.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll probably have some good stories.
All right. Good.
Okay,
thanks
good.
Again
good
and good night.
Okay. Good
and
night.
Listeners, thank all of you for joining us here on the New American Dream Radio Show. We've got another one. In the can, as it were. Thanks again. Be back next week and every week right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Good night.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message. Is your data safe? Do you have the necessary information to assist you in confidently living through just about any survival situation? Is survival and gardening, off-grid living, medical knowledge, or even natural or man-made EMPs on your list of personal concerns? Do you have your documents and your personal information in a safe place in your hands where you know where it is? Well, check out our preloaded EMP-proof thumb drive. Over 3 gigs of survival documents and how-tos, plus the USDA offline food preservation website, and much, much more, including a surprise bonus we just can't tell you about here. With plenty of room left over to store your most important documents. Imagine if a megavirus or a computer failure took out your bank, or all the banks for that matter. Are your banking records safe in your hands? So when they get things fixed and repaired, you can say, hey, look, this is what I had. You have it. I want it back. Is your personal data safe? Family records, addresses, phone numbers? We'll squeeze on over to freedomslips.com. Yes, that's www.freedomslips.com. Click the banner on the homepage for the EMP-proof bullet drive to get the full scoop of everything that we offer. So, folks, keep your data safe for your peace of mind. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the People's War. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings!
A time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious. Makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, by all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You come.